Oui.
Good morning, Denver.
Can we just listen to the music and let the show go?
It's great. Great song. I used to worry a lot. Used to hurry a lot. See? Spiritual.
It is spiritual.
Wake up to the Eagles. What's wrong with that?
That's good stuff.
You've tuned in to You Get the Blessing. This is Bob Belts, and my normal partner, Bo Mitchell, is on assignment today, and we're very privileged to have Chuck King sitting in with us. And Chuck, you always do a great job, but it's good to have you with us. They should see you again today. You're just,
I'm
you're so spiffy.
TV. I thought it was a TV show.
Yeah, you're spiffy, man. So
does that make me your abnormal partner if Bo is your normal partner?
Well, we could. Well, I guess you could be the normal partner.
We've got a terrific guest with us today, Tim McTavish, an entrepreneur and a Christian with a terrific testimony, who's going to share with us about his life and entrepreneurship and things that are going on in his ministry.
Good to have you with us, Tim.
Yeah, good to be here, Bob. Thank you.
So, Tim, were you raised in Colorado?
Born and raised. Proud native.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Mile High Academy, a Christian school here in Denver. Fourth grade through high school.
And then on to college?
On to college. I went to another Christian school in the Napa Valley area of California, but was eager to get back to Colorado.
And post-college, you started your first business, is that right?
Yes, I worked for a couple of years as an insurance agent, and in doing so, discovered the need for providing leads to insurance agents and for creating a shopping service for consumers. And so I created this company called InsureMe, and in 1996, read HTML for Dummies, slapped together a web page, and the thing took off.
Wow. And you've since sold that business, and you moved on to another entrepreneurial activity. Is that right?
Yeah. So I sold the company in 2008. They've rebranded under a few other acquisitions to a company called InsuranceQuotes.com. And in that downtime, completed my MBA at Colorado Christian University, and kept my ear to the ground for another opportunity, and heard a little bit about this idea called crowdfunding, and thought, you know, there needs to be a crowdfunding business for nonprofit organizations. So I started a company called Giving Zone.
So tell us what crowdfunding is.
It's a new twist to an old business, and that's basically asking your friends for money. And
now you get to ask people that you don't even know for money.
Yeah, and you get them to ask their friends for money. So yeah, the idea is that you capture a little bit of social networking involved in the fundraising ask, and you just kind of get the message out there as to the funds that you want to try to raise.
I do some work in the film industry, and it's amazing how many young filmmakers now they're really
yes.
trying to, you know, and there, if you send a dollar, you become an executive producer.
Yeah. So,
you know, that's the hook on it for the film guys, I think.
Yes.
So tell us about, growing up and you obviously grew up in a Christian home. You went to Christian schools. When did you make your faith your own?
Great question. I had a wonderful upbringing, have always known Christ as my Lord and Savior, but it was probably at the age of 25 that I would say that I fell in love with Jesus. And that was at an event where a guest speaker was coming into town to talk about the book of Romans. And a friend convinced me to go to these events, and I went and listened, and for whatever reason, the gospel kind of penetrated in a way that it hadn't before. And I realized how much Christ gave up for me, and just fell in love with him. And so then from that, then began thinking about, you know, ways in which I needed to integrate my faith, you know, more aggressively into my day-to-day life.
And where were you in your business at that point in time?
I was actually just launching my company about that time. And surprisingly, even having this fervor for the Lord, really still had compartmentalized my life in such a way that I really was approaching business as a separate aspect to my life than I needed to be, for sure. And attended church regularly and was involved with other different organizations from a Christian perspective, but really didn't bring my faith into my workplace in any kind of tangible way.
And how did that change when you renewed your relationship with Christ?
You know, it's always a process, I think, as you grow in faith and learn more about how that walk can look. A friend of mine shared with me a book called Business by the Book by the author Larry Burkett. And in that, Larry Burkett just lays out how your workplace is your place of ministry. And it really kind of nailed me between the eyes as to how compartmentalized my life had become and the opportunity that I was losing out on by operating my business the way I had done up to that point. And so we began applying biblical principles in the workplace, and God just did amazing things to kind of turn them around the culture and the work environment there. It became a lot of fun, and profits went crazy too.
So how did the culture change in terms of what went on a daily basis?
Well, prior to that, you know, I really was open to just letting people conduct themselves as they wanted to. So there was a lot of cursing that went on. We had a call center type of environment, and we had customers who owed us money, and we would kind of get on their case for the money that they owed us. And I didn't really care too much about what kind of conduct the coworkers engaged in. I thought, well, I'll set a good example myself, but I don't necessarily need to infringe my beliefs on their activity. And so for years, I just let this go on, and it really created a negative work environment. We experienced extremely high turnover, you know, literally having people leave on their break and never return back and leaving in tears. It was a very ugly work environment.
How many employees did you have at the time?
At that time, probably 30.
And so when you began to try to change the culture, that's always an interesting thing, particularly when you're in this legal environment where
yes.
you're trying to change a culture in favor of Christian values. So how did you approach that?
Well, by focusing on values that we can all appreciate and resonate with, I think that became the key. And so we had four core values: love, integrity, leadership, and innovation. And even though I derived much of that from my faith, nobody's going to really argue with those kind of values. And in fact, once we laid it out there as to even the definition of our love value, treating others as we would want to be treated, taking the way, you know, Jesus had defined it, it really helped to then give the employees a basis for thinking through their decisions and their conduct in the workplace as well, and also holding me accountable to try to demonstrate love to them, love to our customers, love to our community as well.
Did you just implement that one day, or I mean, how did that transition?
Yeah, no, there was a process. We took some time to really evaluate what would be our values today. What are the values that we hold, good and bad? And we surveyed the employees. We gave them a list of different values that they would like to see within the organization. And we kind of fine-tuned a number of things. It was really a process that took several months.
You know, those values embedded in the corporation really do make a difference over time, and it's often hard to change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
At one point in my career, I worked for Samsonite Corporation, which was founded, of course, by the Schwader Company, a devoutly Jewish family. And when I went to work at Samsonite in 1974, I was given a marble with the golden rule around it. And we were told as managers to carry that marble in our pocket. And anytime we're involved in a transaction, to put our hand on that marble and think of the golden rule and how we would want to be treated mm-hmm. when we're dealing with other customers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a hallmark of Samsonite for many years.
Hmm.
Where can you get those marbles?
No, yeah. I still have one.
Do you have one?
I do. I have one of the originals.
Compartmentalize. I just want to ask a quick question because you use that word, and I, you know, I have a lot of friends that are in business, and some of whom are also believers, and I do know some of them really do compartmentalize,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to break through that. It seems like, I mean, how do you ever coach others, or how do you get through that kind of mindset?
Yes. I don't know exactly if there's some specific advice, but I do have a lot of coffee with folks and have one-on-one conversations with a lot of folks that are trying to navigate that. And I think really it first boils down to having the heart to want to change. And also then in looking at other businesses that are doing it right and picking up some examples of how it can be done, just to have your eyes opened to the reality of how it can be. And also then looking at the benefits. Once that culture does change, once you eliminate that excessive turnover, once you get your employees engaged and communicating well with one another, I mean, the payoffs are phenomenal. And not that you approach it to get that, but boy, those side benefits are certainly well worth the effort to engage in that process, to be focused on your people, focused on your culture.
So do you find it a challenge that many of your competitors don't share those values and you're competing against people that aren't on a level playing field?
No. I find that most people resonate quite well with the values, and if anything, they are challenged by them themselves, and it causes everybody, you know, raises all boats, if you will. And I think for employees, you know, we had many employees who certainly would have no interest in going to church per se or things of that nature. But when they saw the way in which we conducted ourselves and the integrity that we tried to uphold, they were attracted to that. We had quite a waiting list of applicants in time that really wanted to come and work there. I mean, we received an award for 4 years running for being in the top 25 great places to work in America. And once you get to that kind of status, it really opens the doors to hiring great people.
Yeah, it probably solves your turnover problem in a big hurry.
It does.
So love, integrity, what were the other two?
Leadership and innovation.
Speaking of innovation, we're going to go to a quick break here, and then I want to talk about entrepreneurship, your advice for entrepreneurs.
Uh-huh.
You're listening to You Get the Blessing. This is Chuck King sitting in for Bo Mitchell and our co-host today, Bob Belts. We have a terrific guest who's talking to us about entrepreneurship and living his Christian values in the workplace, Tim McTavish. Tim, tell us about being an entrepreneur. I know you're now teaching a class in entrepreneurship at Colorado Christian University.
Mm-hmm.
And all the students are leaving my classes to go to that class. So
I don't know about that.
It's a very popular class.
Yeah. I'm honored to do it. And it's like putting sparks together to allow me to teach in that kind of Christian context and to teach on a subject that I hold so passionately. So it's a real privilege.
So what are the things that you teach about entrepreneurship? If someone wants to become an entrepreneur, what are the keys?
Well, part of our process is to first recognize that it is a high and holy calling, that your workplace is the place in which you can connect with people in a way and build relationships in a way that you can really touch people with the love of Christ, however that might look. Maybe not necessarily giving a Bible study, but just sharing in a tangible way, a way in which you demonstrate Christ's love to them. So helping them to recognize that people engage in transactions all the time, people have to work, people have to have jobs, and if you can engage your employees in a positive way, you will reach somebody far more effectively than most pastors would even have the chance to do.
Yeah, I was thinking, do you ever get any pastors taking your class on entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Well, this has just started for me, and we'd be honored. Yeah.
I might need that one, Chuck.
You might need that one.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest challenges when you become an entrepreneur? You start a business. Most entrepreneurs that I know are excited about an idea, but they don't really know where to go from there.
There are so many different ways to answer that question. I'm not sure what would be the single biggest challenge. Your idea has to be one that people are really going to want and that they're going to want to pay money for. And we've talked about this in our class. A lot of the students have wonderful ideas for them, but is somebody really going to pull out their credit card and pay for that service? And so even though it might be something you're passionate about, you have to think about, you know, is it really something that, that people are going to want? And so it comes down to marketing and and sales and cultivating that idea. Also, you know, building that team. I mean, you might have a great idea. We actually aren't hurting for good ideas. I mean, we've thought of flying cars and this and that, all kinds of different inventions that we can think of. But who's the team that's going to rally around that and pull that together? And where are you going to get those resources? And so that's really the challenge.
So do you make your students watch Shark Tank? Is that part of your assignments?
We actually watched an episode of Shark Tank in class.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yes.
So, Tim, I know you've had great success and you have been very generous and you have a real passion for others to be generous. Tell us about the work you've done in that area, not just about your company Giving Zone, but about your thoughts about charitable giving.
Yeah, that's a great question and it is a passion of mine. And it wasn't one that wasn't so. Early on when I started the company, the idea was, you know, I just want to make as much money as I can. Well, God had to break me of that. And we struggled for many, many, many years until the business finally did turn around. But it was only after I became more concerned about my people, more concerned about our relationships with our customers, things like that, that we finally were rewarded for providing a good work environment. And one of the things that we did is we decided as an organization that we were going to tithe on the profits of our company. And in doing so, I thought, you know, how can we involve our employees? And certainly our employees are the ones who have helped to produce these profits. How can we bless them with that? So we created a handful of different ways of dispersing that 10%. We had a 3-to-1 employer match on funds that they would give to charity. So if they gave $100, we'd give $300. And we had times, you know, years where we would give literally several hundred thousand dollars with our employees giving tens of thousands of dollars themselves toward the organizations that they were more passionate about. And so that was one element that was real neat. We also engaged in different kinds of volunteer service trips where we would have groups go to Juarez, Mexico, for example, and build homes or go to Africa and go to orphanages and things like that. So we helped compensate them. We gave them about half of the time off as well as half of the cost of going on those kinds of trips. And what really then helped shape that culture and really entrench that value of love in the organization was the charitable giving side of things. So it really helped the business take off when we engaged our employees in charitable giving.
Bob, what a great model. We could get more people to understand that operating a business from a Christian perspective is not a challenge as much as it is a great opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a very good friend that's like one of the most successful businessmen anywhere, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I jokingly one day read through the, I don't know if you've ever read the Desert Fathers, but you know, you've got these guys back in the 3rd and 4th century that went out and lived these lives. And a lot of them wrote, and there's collections of it, but there was one of the Desert Fathers named Evagrius the Solitary. You might want to remember that, Chuck. And he said that in every business transaction, you should try to lose a little money because it keeps you from greed. And I quoted that to my friend and he just looked at me with a very strange look on his face. it is. So, you know, trying to balance and juggle the spiritual life with business, it's, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure, as you know, it's challenging. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. So, Tim, I know you're on the board of directors at Colorado Christian University, and you're involved in a number of other nonprofit organizations in town. Tell us about some of your involvements and how people can get involved with those organizations.
Well, yes, CCU, Colorado Christian University, is really one of my favorites for sure. It's just been a real treat and honor to serve on the board there and to follow with Bill Armstrong's leadership there and just try to continue to encourage and support him in those efforts. We've seen a lot of transition over the 6 years. And interestingly, what kind of transpired there, even how I became a member of the board, is kind of a fun story. As I was selling my company, I set up a donor advised fund with the National Christian Foundation. And in that process, met the gentleman who was organizing that. He invited me to a Bible study. I attended the Bible study. And as I was thinking of selling the company, I was looking at, well, maybe I'll go back to school and get my MBA. I hear good things going on at CCU. And I pulled up Bill Armstrong's bio from their website. And I thought, wow, what an accomplished person this is. I'd love to meet him someday. At this Bible study, I met one of the gentlemen who happened to be on the board at CCU and said, oh, I'd love to meet Bill Armstrong someday. And he said, well, we'll go out to lunch together. I said, I don't know what I'd say to the man. I just want to shake his hand. And one thing led to another, and Bill invited me to campus, and we got together on a handful of other occasions, and then I was invited to be on the board. And it's just been a real honor to be connected with such thought leaders here in the Denver community and to serve with the organization at that level. Anyway, it's very good.
So, Tim, I've gotten to know your family. I have one of your sons in class right now, and hopefully have your daughter next year. And I've seen those values that you talked about are in those kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get the kids involved in that value system and understanding the importance of that in business? Because I know that's their value set.
Mm-hmm. I have my wife to credit for a lot of our parenting success, for sure. We homeschooled our kids until they were either through eighth grade or in some cases 10th grade. And so that had a huge influence on them, just, I think, appreciating our perspectives. And we have great dinner conversations. We talk about, you know, things, our viewpoints on matters, as well as, involving them in various discussions. And it's just been a great opportunity, I think, through homeschooling that we've had to connect as a family that perhaps others may not have quite as much of an opportunity for.
How old were your children at the time you made the decision to fully integrate God into your business?
Let's see. My son would have just been born.
Okay.
Yes.
So they've sort of grown up in that environment.
Yes.
How do you pass that attitude on to students? Because I happen to know from having taught college students for a number of years, there is this tendency toward believing, well, the world is really compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. People go out in the business world and they're successful and they may be Christians, but the two don't necessarily mix.
Mm-hmm.
What's your advice to parents and to students in that regard?
Well, you have to be consistent yourself. So, they're going to look at inconsistencies in your own life. And so if you're not walking the talk, that's going to be a big red flag. So I think that's where it starts predominantly. And then just having those conversations, talking about that, it is kind of nice here in my course that I'm teaching at CCU on entrepreneurship. My son is one of my students, and so it's a good opportunity to kind of lay it out there. And I think he's seeing a new side of dad that he didn't know before.
Does it give you a little more leverage outside the classroom?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's and before we have to wrap it up here, tell us a little bit more about the Giving Zone then, and how people can kind of hook into that.
Sure. Giving Zone is a website platform for fundraising, and it's an opportunity for people to create projects and promote those projects. So it's more of event-based type of fundraising. We're not for the big capital campaigns and things of that nature, but if a person is needing to raise money for a short-term mission trip, or if they want to run the Boulder and raise $2,500, let's say, for an organization, and if they get to that goal, they'll run it with their head shaved. That's the kind of project we like to host. We do a lot of group fundraising efforts where schools, for example, will do, say, a basketball shoot-a-thon, where they'll take a weekend to have a shoot-a-thon. The students have gone out to their community to say, hey, will you sponsor me 50 cents a basket? I'm getting 50 free throws, and how much will you give me? And so we track all that. We do the payment processing make it easy for those organizations to be able to.
And you can access that.
So givingzone.com is the website. And you can find out about us there.
That I believe is a for-profit business. Is that correct?
It is a for-profit. We're hoping to be for-profit.
That's the idea. My father used to have a sign.
Yeah, don't take the advice of Evagrius the Solitaire.
Yeah. So. My father used to have a sign in his store that said, this is a non-profit business. It wasn't intended that way. It just happened. But this is something we're seeing happen a lot today in the world is for-profit ministries where people are in the business to make a living, but they're also trying to do good ministry work through what they're doing. So I compliment you on that, and I encourage our listeners out there to think about how they can use their businesses as a ministry.
Mm-hmm. Good advice, Chuck. Well, Tim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Today. And Chuck, thank you for sitting in that seat where our good friend normally occupies.
I think I'm a lot better looking than Bo, don't you?
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to You Get the Blessing, and we'll look forward to being with you again next Sunday.